The Competitive 40K Network presents Art of War.
Art of War.
Strategy and tactics. Discussions with the best players on the planet. Now your host, Nick Nanavati.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Art of War podcast. I'm your host, Nick Nanavati, and we are joined with a very special guest today, Kit Smith Hanna. Kit, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Nick. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic. The reason Kit is so special is because he's been a war member since like the very beginning, and he has grown so much as a player that he's actually now won the Clutch City Open, a major tournament over in Texas. And he's done it with an army that I don't think anyone's talking about. It's on absolutely no one's radar, and it is supremely powerful. It is Dark Angels with Storm Ravens. What are we even talking about? So in this episode, we're going to get to know Kit. We're going to get to know about how he came from, you know, the very beginning of his Warhammer journey to winning majors and how you can do the same thing. We're going to talk about how he developed this list in the Clutch City tournament in Dallas. And we're going to talk about how it actually works on the tabletop, the strategies, the Storm Ravens, all that good stuff. In part two, which of course is for our patrons on AOW40K.com, you're going to get access to all the good stuff. We're going to go round by round through his tournament. We're going to go match by match through his moves. We're going to learn the tactics he used to win his games, how he dealt with terrain, how he dealt with the opponent's stratagems and counterplays, and how it all came together in the actual event. So if you're interested in learning the game, becoming your best, and following on this super exciting journey, please do subscribe on Patreon. It'll support our channel. $5 a month. It goes a really long way. So, Kit, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing pretty good, Nick. That was a fun event, and the Raven list is a blast to play, man. It's a list that was created, honestly, a while ago at this point, but it has been incredibly fun to play with and optimize.
I'm so excited to hear that, and I'm really excited to break down the list and how it all works together. But first, I want to get to know about you a little bit. How did you get into Warhammer? How long have you been playing?
At this point, I've been playing for 4 years, just about. I got into Warhammer in a funny way, something that I think is unusual for people, which is it was mid-2020 during COVID, the summer of COVID, as I had just finished off my last year of high school, actually. Then me and a friend were looking for something to do over the summer, but it's COVID, and so we couldn't actually like meet face-to-face and interact in the normal ways. So we found, hey, there's this funny game, Warhammer, that we can play on Tabletop Simulator, or TTS. And we decided to try it out. And I got hooked, like hard hooked on the game. He ended up playing only like two or three games and then not getting that interested. But I dove into it. I just really, really enjoyed the game and the list creation and everything. This was right at the end of 8th edition, right before 9th edition launched. And I was learning the game, and then 9th edition hit. And that was a fun time, just learning the game kind of over again from scratch. And I started getting into competitive on Tabletop Simulator. And playing there, playing a ton for a year and a half almost, just purely on TTS. Then eventually I decided, you know what? I was in college, there's a bunch of people around me who also play in person and this game that I really love. And I decided, hey, I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to buy an army. And I found this giant Tyranid slot on eBay that I went out and bought for like $2,500 and then started playing in person.
Sounds like an enormous army. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like 12,000 points. It was absurd.
So now Kit has Tyranids.
I was like, well, now I have all the Tyranids.
Right. That's really cool. Every single one of them. Were you playing Tyranids on TTS this whole time? Or were you like switching up with your armies? Why did you just jump in with 2,500 points of Tyranids?
Basically, I'd been swapping around for a little bit on TTS and was trying to find an army that I had enjoyed the playstyle of. You know how it is. And then just I found Tyranids that I really enjoyed. And in particular, this was I think 4 or 5 months after Crusher Stampede had come out. And I was really liking Crusher Stampede. It was super fun to play. I've always kind of been a sucker for the big monster slash vehicle mash list with super high damage. And that just it attracted me so much. So I was like, all right, you know what? If I'm going to get an army in person, I'm really enjoying these Tyranids. I'm going to get Tyranids. And then I got Tyranids. And also there was an insane That's deal awesome. On them.
I mean, yeah. When the time is right. Right.
Yeah, it was like, so how well, was your, it's a sign.
Yeah. It's a sign. I love that. How was your competitive success at this point? Because obviously that's quite the transition, playing only online, switching around factions, and then now you have a 12,000-point Tyranid army and you're playing in person. I want to talk about the transition from, you know, TTS to in-person and what that's like, because I think that's pretty unique. And then how are you doing?
It was shockingly smooth, actually. The first game or two was a little, it was a weird experience because I had at that point pretty good knowledge of like all the tactics and strategy in the game, but I had never gotten a tape measure and measured out models by hand or had to move around and set up terrain in physically and all the stuff that just comes with playing in person. And so I started out, I was doing decent. And then I started going to the RTTs locally. First one I went to, I did fine, not great. And then I started doing really well, actually. I started enjoying it a lot and winning the RTTs repeatedly and decided, okay, sure, I'm going to go to a big tournament. So because some friends were going and they offered to bring me along because I didn't have a car. And one down in Houston. And it ended up actually being Clutch City, ironically. That was the first ever tournament I went to, Clutch City 2022. With
this is almost full circle for you that you...
And
yeah, that's really exciting.
That was the first ever tournament that I won. I went there...
Your first tournament you just went in and won? That is crazy, kid.
I went there.
And that is not a normal thing. You know, we coach people. I'm like, for your first tournament ever, you know, be prepared to go 0-3 and make some friends. You went 6-0 and made some friends. How did that even happen?
Yeah. It legitimately was just, I had been, because I had so much experience playing the game and strategy and tactics, I kind of was building a Tyranids list to counter the meta at the time, which was Custodes. It was Custodes everywhere. It was Custodes and Tau. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to bring this off-meta Tyranids build with a Maliceptor to counter all of their strength 8 shooting on their bikes and strength 5 shooting on the Sagittarium, dropping it to strength 7 and strength 4 while I have a ton of T8 monsters. And it ended up working out really, really well. Now, I also knew going in that if I ran into Tau, I was probably done for because I would probably lose that game. But I ended up dodging Tau for the whole event and just ran into Custodes in rounds 5 and 6. And the list worked perfectly. It worked exactly how I intended it to.
That's awesome. So it basically sounds like you have a pretty good grasp on the meta and list construction right off the grasp. It's almost like it comes intuitively to you. Is that just like years of grinding on TTS or like do you have experience in gaming? Where is that from?
Partially. It's partially that... So, when I say I played on TTS for a year and a half, I mean I played a lot on TTS, probably an unhealthy amount. But also, since I was young, I have really, really enjoyed board games, and the strategic board games in particular. And so Warhammer kind of came as just that aspect of it, the list construction, I just really grabbed on naturally too. And it was really fun just building and optimizing lists like that because it was a huge amount of strategy element in there. There's the tactical part in the game while you're playing, and then there's the strategic element that's entirely separate of creating the list beforehand, looking at the meta, figuring out, okay, what is it that can deal with the meta as well as deal with all the random lists that I'm probably going to encounter.
Right. There's a lot of factors that kind of go into it. And there's so many different approaches to list building and play style. Oh, yeah. Right? So what would you describe your play style as?
Generally, I like to play relatively... The thing that I have found that I enjoy the most and do the best with the most is armies that are focused around a reasonably small amount of very high durability, high damage output, high mobility models. Just the really strong units that make up the centerpiece of the list. Because then I'm able to use those to go almost for a more tempo play style of trying to lock down my own objectives and just hit the opponent after turn after turn. I really find that the play style that I focus on is almost more of a primary centric play as opposed to secondary focused, where I'm trying to lock down my own primaries and really hammer the opponent on their primary. That's the main way that I like to play.
So it sounds like you play a pretty, like you said, primary centric. You take these big, mm-hmm. chunky, awesome units, and they're fast, they shoot hard, they are tough, which also means they're expensive. You know, this is not a cheap army.
They're not cheap.
Right. Then you lock down your side, like you said, and just mm-hmm. hammer your opponent turn after turn after turn. It sounds like a very aggressive approach, and you know, one where you're going to take some damage, but you're going to deal more to your opponent and stuff.
Yeah,
not army can mm-hmm. like support that play style. Do you find certain factions you gravitate towards more than others? Obviously, Tyranids, but anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. In my mind, I don't actually do that well with hyper aggressive armies. I've found like the World Eaters, Orcs of the World. I do better with armies that are almost staging centric, where it's, okay, I move forward, stage everywhere, and then I'm going to hit you with an absolute hammer on the next turn. And the armies that I don't do well with, honestly, are the armies that are more hypermobile mission jank, like GSC, Eldar, Drukhari, those sort of factions. Those I struggle with a lot more because I'm not able to play the tempo pressure game that I like playing of being able to apply massive threat from staging. And it's more about just being able to sacrifice units turn after turn, deny the opponent points, and use trickery to lock in your own your own secondaries and primary. Those I don't do as well with, I find.
It sounds like we're like totally polar opposite in army.
Just about.
It's really cool. You're like saying your playstyle. I'm like, this is so guerrilla-ish. You know, you just deploy on the line and you fight them.
You never deploy like, on the line.
You're like listing my factions. You're like, these factions don't work for me. I'm like,
for that's me, really it's cool. Less about, yeah. It's less about deploy on the line and it's more about try to figure out kind of how much pressure can I apply to them without while minimizing the threat to myself. That's kind of the way I try to play.
Is apply it like deploy as close as possible, but still behind line of sight?
Exactly. Figure out exactly what I like doing with the list in particular is figure out, okay, exactly the angles that you can get. I'm so mobile that I'm threatening your deployment, forcing you to play relatively cagey. And then I can use the fact that I often outdrop people to just go, okay, cool. I'm going to go ahead and deploy in this position where I've pre-measured everything out. I know you can't actually hit me turn one, but I'm still able to threaten massive areas of the board.
How is that process for you in real life tournament play? Mm-hmm. Let me break that question down a little bit because you have a background in TTS in terms of how you got started. And I played a little bit of TTS as for Team American mm-hmm. now. On TTS, it is very, very easy if you're skilled at the program to look at the board, draw some lines, and get perfect line of sight angles. Like if you move exactly 9 inches this way, you see this far. And you can play mm-hmm. a very clear and precise game of Warhammer. And then in translation on the table in person, there is like the human to human interaction. There is the mm-hmm. fact that models are messy, tape measures in human hands are imprecise. Getting those kinds of precision spots is a little more difficult, potentially unreliable. How do you navigate that as a player?
So the main thing is that's, I think, where TTS actually helps me a little bit. And that it teaches me to look for those sort of angles and be able to look at, okay, I know that if I can look for the angles where it's possible to hide, and I know where on the board to look for that. And then for actually setting them up in person, the biggest help, the biggest factor is just playing by intent. That is how I play the game, and it's how I think the game is most fun and easiest to play. It's
opinions on play by intent. Yep. That's like the only way to play.
Oh, yeah. It honestly is. It's just figuring out, okay, cool. I'm trying to hide. For example, what I'll do oftentimes is sometimes use a laser pointer, sometimes use a tape measure, whatever. Just literally draw out a line with the tape measure or laser pointer and say, okay, my intention is to check what your maximum range is that you can move to if you deploy in this position. And then I say, okay, my goal here is to be hiding behind this angle created by the terrain so that you can't shoot me if you walked forward and shot from this angle. Or, okay, you have to be in front of this piece of terrain in order to shoot my models. And then because I declare it pregame and I'm just playing by intent like that, if I'm slightly off and the opponent notices, then it can just be, oh, cool, you're slightly off that line. You are actually shootable right now. Here.
Yeah, definitely. As long as you go through that process and you really say that whole thing, I think it's much easier to navigate than it might seem. It's a kind of reverse methodology in thinking, measuring your opponent's models, their threat range, their line of sight. But that does tell you your safeties. So if you can think like that, it's pretty easy to measure like that, even in real life. If you play by intents, like you just said, Kit, it's a pretty achievable goal. And I think that type of play transforms players. Like, I know you're making use of it almost to the point where that is your play style now, but that is, you know, the best way you can get better at Warhammer, in my opinion, is just pre-measuring stuff and really being methodical about your placements. But I want to talk about like your transition here, because we keep alluding to this list that has Storm Ravens, and I want to hold off on giving it away real quick, because you're like a diehard Tyrion player. You've got 12,000 points of Tyrion, just $2,500 as a college kid. It's a lot of money. So how are we just playing Storm Ravens now? Like, what has been your faction progression? If I recall seeing you at Worlds, there was Tau in your hands. What's going on here?
Yeah, essentially what that comes down to is, as I've played the game, I found that it's less so one specific army that I enjoy, and it's more that there's a playstyle that I really love playing. And so what I'll oftentimes do, because I have the ability to access a frankly large amount of armies, because both myself and my roommate both own a pretty vast collection of armies available, I'll just look at, okay, what armies are there available that are really good at countering the current meta and are able to fit a play style that will work well for me. And so that can lead to me playing different armies most oftentimes. But what I'll usually do is I'll work on an army, workshop it, get a lot of practice reps in, and then play it for a while until the playstyle stops working for one reason or another, the meta shifts, or the army becomes less powerful or whatnot. And then I'll have to reevaluate and go, okay, given the options that I have available, what can I do that is going to be very effective at dealing with the current meta and is able to fit a playstyle that I will enjoy?
I love that. So it's basically you're such a Warhammer addict that you have acquired a massive armies with your friends that you can swap which armies you play based on what you're feeling. Sounds familiar, honestly.
Yep, just about.
That's pretty cool, Kit. So what is your favorite faction to play? Is it Tyranids or something else?
Honestly, my favorite faction to play is Demons.
Boy.
I love Demons, man. There's something about like the monster mash, high mobility playstyle of Demons that is always present with them, because they're a tricky army. So they have a lot of movement jank that I can exploit and be able to do very powerful things with. And it has skill expression in it. But there are also a lot of really tough and really high damage models, which is just fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I do love
and my it fits right that playstyle really well.
It does. It does. So, unfortunately, they might not be the top of the meta like some other factions, but no. The list you were playing, the faction you used, they were certainly not on my radar, at least. why don't you tell us what the list you took to Clutch City was?
Yeah, so the list I took to Clutch City was one of the versions of a list I've been piloting for a while, which is Dark Angel Storm Ravens. And the specific variants was we had a Azrael, and he was joining up with some company heroes because that unit is just amazing. We had a Ravenwing Talonmaster with Master of Machine War, RIP Talonmaster, but I've already got plans for how to deal with that. Then a Tech Marine with, oh, for those who are unaware, the Ravenwing Talonmaster has the Master of Machine War enhancement, which gives out an aura of advance and fallback and shoot for all vehicles. And that's really nice when you're able to put it on such a high mobility platform. And then we've got Tech Marine with Target Augury Web, a 6-inch aura of lethal hits for vehicles. A Tech Marine with Adept of the Omnis Eye, which is, again, a 6-inch aura for vehicles, of when a failed save once per round is failed, you can change the damage to 0. Then we have a pack of Scouts, a Ravenwing Dark Shroud, 3 Redemptor Dreadnoughts, all with the Plasma, because it's amazing, Onslaught, Fragstorm, and Icarus, a Stormspeeder Thunderstrike, 2 Stormraven gunships with Hurricane Bolters, Twin Plasma Cannons, and Twin Multimeltas, and then 4 Inquisitorial Henchmen for holding the backfield.
Dark Angels, Storm Ravens. I never thought I would. I'm not even joking. Like, 230-something episodes of this podcast. That has never been an episode.
The list is so good.
Well, that's what we're here to talk about. I mean, from my untrained eyes, and I really don't know much about Dark Angels as a faction, so you can help walk us through, like, kind of the things you... as the army works, but it just looks like this is a pile of guns that shoots you. It's like 2 Storm Ravens, 3 Dreadnoughts, a couple speeders. Like, what is this? I can totally see how you go first, you deploy on the line, you blow somebody up who's deployed in the open, the game's over before it starts. Sure, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, like, you have 6 games of a tournament, other people have armies that go first, things happen. Like, how does this thing actually work?
So, the way the list works is essentially you're combining 2-3 kind of elements to the army, which is it's the durability, the speed, and the damage output. The durability, and this is half the reason that I run Dark Angels, is you're able to stack a significant amount of durability boosts on these Storm Ravens. And as long as you're also combining that with intelligent pre-measuring of threat ranges, you're just able to set up situations where they're not able, the resources they can get onto the Storm Raven aren't going to be that effective. So the durability boost that you're able to stack in particular, obviously you have the Storm Raven gunship is -1 damage natively, great rule. And then all 3 Redemptor Dreadnoughts are also -1 damage natively, also a great rule. So if you run into damage 2, you've created kind of a skew that's hard for them to deal with. They also have the Ravenwing Dark Shroud, which is an incredible unit. It gives out a 6-inch aura of stealth and cover for all units, period. Then, finally,
For 115, that is crazy.
it is absurd, actually. That unit is insanely good. It's kind of fragile. Only T8, 10 wounds, 3 up, 5 up. But it's not so fragile that you can just trivially kill it. You have to dedicate real resources. And then the final stack to the durability boosting is the Adept of the Omnis Eye Tech Marine, which turns a failed save to damage 0 once per round. That's really good if you run into someone that's like, and for example, round 2, I ran into a guard opponent who was packing a Vanquisher battle tank, which has that big D6 plus 6 gun that's otherwise really scary for Storm Raven because it gets around the minus 1 damage easily. But Adept of the Omnissiah says, oh, I failed the save, which isn't even a guarantee, with Armor of Contempt and the cover from the Dark Shroud. You can oftentimes make saves. You have a one-up effective save. If I fail the save, the damage just goes to zero, and I don't have to worry about it.
That's really good. So that's once per turn on any tank?
Once per battle round on any vehicle within six, yeah. An interesting aspect is that the Tech Marines end up being fairly crucial to the list, so you have to play kind of cagey with them. But there's also the factor that it plays into the second factor, which is the speed of the list. Because the Stormraven gunship, the best part about the Stormraven gunship is that it has a transport capacity of 12 infantry models and one dreadnought, which means you put a Redemptor inside. And so,
you're actually putting a Redemptor inside a Stormraven as
every
not a meme?
Single game. Every single game.
Okay, what is the trick here?
The trick is what that means is that you have this Stormraven, which you hover every game. You never try and fly it off the board. You just hover. It goes on the line. It moves 20 inches. So you move 20 inches, and you just pre-measure your Tech Marine ores so that you stay in range of all of your defensive boosts and Dark Shroud and etc. And then you can drop out a Redemptor in front of him. And the Redemptor then doesn't get to charge, but it gets to shoot. And that means you, with how big the Redemptor base is, you can drop, because the Redemptor base is so big, you're able to drop a Redemptor like well over 20 inches away from your deployment zone. You can almost drop it in your opponent's deployment turn one.
Wow. Yeah, like it's easy to hop a Redemptor in your own deployment zone. Like turn one,
oh, yeah,
like,
it only moves 8 inches.
Shooting. But when it moves 20 inches, then gets out of the storm room. That's what even is that?
Yeah, that's a lot harder to hide from, it turns out. And because it's so hard to hide from that, that forces people to play KG because you have to respect it. If you don't respect the Stormraven movement, then, oh, hey, two Stormravens are just going to fly out, dump out two Redemptors, and now I've got almost 1,000 points of good, really high-quality Marine shooting hitting you, turn one. So you have to respect that. You have to pre-measure around it. And because the threat ranges are so incredibly massive, that severely limits where you're able to play the game at.
I love that in terms of like it forces your opponent to make this decision of basically, do I deploy aggressively? And then if I go second, mm-hmm. I'm just done.
You know, just lose.
It's Redemptors, yeah. Crush the left flank, it's over. Or I deploy really cagey behind the walls, you know, mm-hmm. like protect the things that need protecting, block that kind of thing. But like, how do you progress the game from there if you're the defending player, like huddled up
at that point in the hole? So. Yeah, so let's say the opponent deploys super passive. And that way it's kind of like World Eaters. Okay, you've deployed super passively. I'm not able to get angles on anything turn one. And you've probably sent out like a unit or two to move block me and make it difficult for me to cut angles. Okay, I'm just going to move up slowly, move to the midboard, keep in all my defensive auras because I'm not having to push up far at all. And kill whatever chaff you sent out to screen, and then just wait. And now I'm in the mid-board, suddenly my threat range is not avoidable, frankly, and I'm on all the objectives. You're now in the position of, if you want to walk onto any objective in the mid-board, you're going to get hit. So it forces action.
So this is kind of the definition of what you defined your play style as, right? It's mm-hmm. durable, it's mobile, it's hyper shooty, and it plays pressure upon your opponent and like crushes them turn after turn after turn. How do you play the mission with this army? Does it just like mm-hmm. you score what you can score as you table them?
The funny thing is the army plays the mission shockingly well, because primary you've got great control over. You've got Redemptors sitting on objectives. That's really hard to remove. And then in secondary play, oftentimes what I'll do more games than not is I'll take fixed. because tactical secondaries, the one of the biggest boosts for the tactical is that it's a free source of command points. But I've got Azrael. He's already giving me command points just on his own. And so I don't need that source of CP, so I'm just going to take Fix. And at that point, I can take... the default is Cleanse and Deploy Teleport Homers. If they give up a kill secondary, cool. I'll usually take Deploy Teleport Homers and a kill secondary, bring it down Assassination, whatever.
I am shocked, actually. Sorry to cut you off. Just the Cleanse is not something I thought you would say there. Kill plus Homers was, you know, everyone does that when you have a kill-based army. But this is like, you have, who's doing Cleanse? Who's doing Homers? Like, I get it, like, for a turn.
Easy, but, honestly. So
who's doing it?
Turn one, really easy. The scouts can just deploy fairly out in the open because of their infiltrate plus scout. And then they'll walk forward, string between two objectives, and cleanse both of them. That's my cleanse for turn one. Solved, don't have to worry about it. For deploy teleport Homers, that could be most often, it's probably going to be the Dark Shroud. The Dark Shroud doesn't really need to do anything on its turn. It just needs to be in a position relatively hidden. And it already wants to be in the midboard because that's where I want to move my army turn one for staging. So at that point, I may as well just put it in the midboard. It's super fast. It moves 14 inches. Put it in the midboard just within 6 inches of the center. And it's so long that it can easily do that. And it's deploying a teleport homer for me. Then as the game continues, I've got just enough random units that I'll be able to, I'm usually able to continue getting those secondaries. Tech Marines oftentimes just walk onto a point and cleanse it. And at that point, they're still providing their auras. They're still able to give out their heals. And they're not trivial to kill. So you run into this challenge of, okay, you can either go after my mission or also just a Redemptor sitting on objective cleansing, a Thunderstrike sit on objective cleanse. I've got so much other redundant firepower that if I don't need every gun in my army shooting that turn, then I can just use one of them to do that, score me some points, and I've still got damage going through. But it creates this problem for the opponent of, I have a huge amount of damage, durability, pressure coming their way that they have to deal with. Because if you don't deal with the Storm Ravens and Redemptors, they're just going to table you. They are that high damage. But if you do go after those, you're not going after my mission pieces. And so I'm just sitting back racking up the points as I'm killing you.
Yeah, it's a very good pressure army in that sense. It's basically got you in this chokehold of like, fight me and die, or don't fight me and lose. And that's pretty much where you want to be. That goes to that staging point you made earlier. And like, the points, they actually are coming to you. It's kind of how work players take cleanse, you know. It's counterintuitive, but if they're going to be on the objectives, what are you going to do about it? I love it.
Yeah, I'm already on the points.
Yeah, exactly. with your firepower here, I think we glossed over how hard this army hits. It's assumed to hit hard because it's a bunch of vehicles and it's kind of the premise. But can you walk me through like how hard this actually hits?
Yeah. So the big thing with this army is how hard it hits is pretty much a linear scale based on how close you are. The Stormraven gunships in particular, at long range, they're fine. They get 2 shots, strength 10, AP 2, 3 damage, and D3 shots blast, strength 8, AP 3, 3 damage, all twin-linked, which, you know, is a decent set of profiles, but nothing breaking the bank. But then we've also got the 2 Hurricane Bolters, which are 6 shots each at 24 inches. If you get within 18, that adds on a twin multi-melta. If you get within 12 inches, suddenly those Hurricane Bolters go from 12 shots total to 24 shots total. Get within 9 inches, I've got Melta on my twin multi-Melta. And suddenly the damage is just increasing and increasing. And then basically every gun on the Storm Raven is twin-linked. The only thing that is not is the missile launcher. And that's the highest strength at strength 10. And I have the Iron Storm reroll, so I can just reroll one of those wounds as needed. So the damage setup that you're able to pull off is into infantry. If you try and push out to the midboard, okay, I've got 48 bolter shots coming into you before the Redemptors even start shooting. And then if you're a vehicle, if you're trying to go, okay, I have this super tough vehicle slash monster, that's where the Thunderstrike comes in. Because the Thunderstrike, its ability, it has basically three las cannons strapped to it, two of which are strength 9. But its real trick is that it's able to give +1 to wound after it shoots an enemy monster vehicle. And suddenly, all those strength 9, strength 8, strength 5 weapons even, and even the Hurricane Bolters, are wounding a monster on 4s and 5s. And they have twin links, so they're re-rolling everything. And I'm converting a lot of those wounds through.
Yeah.
And that's before talking about Mercy's
absolutely. That sounds absolutely brutal. And I was going to say, we haven't even got to the lethal fives yet. Talk about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So the other factor is we have the Tech Marines. One of the Tech Marines is the blank. I already covered him. But the other factor is we have two Tech Marines, which are both able to give +1 to hit 2 units, usually a Storm Raven. And then we have one of them with a target augury web, which gives an aura of lethal hits, which is just baseline good on the amount of shots that I'm putting out between the Onslaught, the Hurricane Bolters, the Plasma, etc. It also gives you the ability to access one of the most powerful damage stratagems in the game, Mercy's Weakness. A stratagem for if you are shooting a unit that has take below its starting strength, so it's taking any damage, and you can plunk damage pretty consistently. You've got grenades for that from scouts, you've got a Thunderstrike shooting, you've got Redemptors, even a Dark Shroud or Tech Marine. And it gives you sustained hits and critical hits on fives. When you combine this with the Tech Marine aura, which also gives the lethal hits, you're now suddenly dealing with a Storm Raven that's hitting on twos with sustained and lethal hits on five ups. Add in Oaths of Moment and potentially the +1 wound from the Thunderstrike, you're killing anything in the game.
Talmaster is no longer legal. It's a Legends model, but how would you change your list to adapt for from the future?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about it. The funny thing is, the vast majority of my practicing has been with the updated list. I just swapped back to my old one for Clutch City because he let me use the Dark Angels Index. But the updated list, what we're doing is we go ahead, we take out the Talonmaster because he no longer exists. We take out the Company Heroes because Azrael currently can no longer join them. And we take out the Scouts. And then in return, we get a Tech Marine with that Advance and Shoot, Master of Machine War. Not as good, but still quite strong. Squads of Assault Intercessors with Jump Packs, and then a Calidus Assassin.
Beautiful. So it's just this very pure damage-dealing, high-pressure destruction army.
Sounds just absolutely almost vicious. One activation.
Right. Yeah. This is not the kind of army you want to mess around and find out about. But that's exactly what we're going to be doing in part two, Kate. We're going to talk about your games, and we're going to talk about how you actually pile this army, you know, into the challenges of the 41st millennium, like terrain and opposition and things like that. If you're interested in learning the game, become invest in generally Dark Angels, Raven, and our Discord server, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/AOW40K. It's $5 a month. It has helped us support this show for 5 years, and I am excited for the future. And I cannot thank you all enough for your support. So please head on over to our Patreon, subscribe. Listeners, we will catch you next week. And Kit, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Nick.
All right. Off to part two, everybody.
Like what you just listened to? Check out Art of War Down Under and Art of War Unbroken on the competitive 40K network. TheArtOfWar40K.com.